Okay, we are. We have a lot to do, we don't have a lot of time. So, Weiler and Gemara. This question actually has. Can be looked at in a lot of different angles. And the answers we're going to be giving could be answering different aspects of the question. So, for example, a person when he's asking Weiler and Gemara, he could be asking as opposed to spending more time, let's say, learning Tanakh. Because I don't know Tanakh. I don't know other basics, fundamentals. Why don't we learn that before we learn Gemara? Another person could be asking, you can leave it open, because imagine people can come in. Another person could be asking, why learn Gemara, like, maybe just leave it open. Why do we spend so much time learning in depth? Learning in depth. We should cover more ground. We heard
the door.
Or another question could be, isn't the Gemara is very nitpicky? Like, it seems to be talking about things that have nothing to do with me. It's talking about these really crazy cases that can never happen. Shouldn't I spend more time just learning halacha, knowing what to do, how do I have to live as a Jew? That's some of the questions. There are other questions also when we say why learn Gemara. So there's a lot of different ways of asking this question. We're going to give now 16 answers. We have about a half an hour to do it, so we're not going to have a lot of time to spend on each answer. The point of these sessions, you're going to go to another session for the second part, another shiur. The point of the shiur is really, and it's all done in-house, like Rebbeim that you get to see more than just once, is that it's like V'idach Zil Gemara. We're just going to give you very Roshei Prakim, just chapter headlines, and you have an opportunity to come in. I'm not going to take questions in this because we don't have enough time. I apologize, because usually who come to my shiur know usually questions take us in a different direction. And so I'm not going to take any questions. If you have any questions, I'm here. We nether, with God's help, I'll be around even past today. And you'll be able to ask me any questions you have on anything we said here. There's some of the answers you may like less than others, and that's okay. There's 16. Yeah, hopefully, one or two of them will really strike you as a home run. Others may be singles, doubles, triples. But whatever the case may be, there's a. Here we go. Answer number one. According to many, for example, Rav Aruch Lipovitz, Rav Yisrael Salanter, the mitzvah of Talmud Torah is actually to learn everything. To learn everything. Whatever there is in Torah, Tanakh, Medrash, Halacha, Gemara, Zohar, to know everything there is in Torah. Gemara is part of everything, last I checked. So why learn Gemara? I have to know everything. I have to know everything. And the mitzvah, Rabbi David gave a shiur on how much you have to learn to fill the mitzvah. So these positions are you have to learn everything and know everything. It's a lot to learn. Number two, in 1994, the annual awards dinner of the American Association for Forensic Science. Okay, 1994, this is before all the CISs, all the shows, the whole popularity of all these different shows, CSI, CIS, CSI, etc., CSI Miami, CSI New York, CSI Los Angeles. If I skipped, Cleveland still didn't have a CSI. I don't imagine you're going to get one soon. But whatever the case may be, all these shows and the popularity of these shows are all about forensic science. It's a very popular major today. 20 years ago, it wasn't so popular. But Don Harper Mills was the president of the AFS, as you probably well know. And in San Diego, at this convention, he astounds the audience with the following story. March 23rd, 1994, medical examiner viewed the body of a certain Ronald Opitz. Okay? And concluded that he died from a shotgun wound to the head. Turns out that the decedent, means the dead person, he jumped from the top of a 10-story building intending to commit suicide. He left a note indicating that was the respondent. And as he fell past the ninth floor, he was actually shot by a shotgun blast that went through the window and hit him as he was going from the 10th floor past the 9th floor. Right at that moment, he gets a shotgun blast to his head. And that's what turns out what killed him instantly. So neither the shooter nor the one jumping had known that a safety net was actually erected on the 8th floor level by window washers, and that had Opus, would he have, you know, had he jumped, he probably would not have died. He did jump, actually, but he would not have, he didn't realize there was a safety net there. He would never actually have died because the safety net would have caught him and would not have committed suicide. So ordinarily, a person who sets out to commit suicide ultimately succeeds, even if the mechanism might not have been what he intended. That Opus was shot on the way to certain death 9 stories below probably would not have changed his mode of death from suicide to homicide. But the fact that there was a safety net there caused the medical examiner to feel that maybe he had a homicide in his hands. So they investigated. The room on the 9th floor was occupied by an elderly man and his wife. At the time of the event, they were arguing, and he was threatening her with a shotgun. He was so upset that he pulled the trigger, completely missed his wife, but the pellets went through the window, striking Opus as he was jumping out, down from the top floor. So when one intends to kill A and ends up killing B, but kills subject B in the attempt, so one is guilty of the murder of subject B. So the investigation turned to the old man as the killer of Ronald Opus. However, when he was confronted with the charge, he claimed that this was his well-known practice of his. They had no intention of killing anybody. That he would threaten his wife with his shotgun. That was the normal behavior they had. But it was unloaded. He never loaded his shotgun. He always would threaten her. You know, oh, I'm going to get you one day. And when he had no intention to murder his wife even, and so the killing of Opus seemed to be an accident. Because the gun had been loaded accidentally. He claimed, and his wife also verified, that the gun's never loaded. So the continuing investigation turns up a witness that actually saw the son of the old man that had loaded the gun a few weeks prior. It transpired that the old lady had cut off her son's financial support. And the son, knowing his father's propensity to threaten his mother with a gun, so he filled the gun, he loaded the gun, hoping that his father would shoot his mother. So the case now becomes one of the murder on the part of the son of this old man and this couple on the death of Ronald Opus. There's a twist. And that is, further investigation revealed that the son of this old couple, whose name was Ronald Opus, had become increasingly despondent over the failure of his attempt to engineer his mother's murder, which led to him to jump off the 10-story building on March 23rd, only to be killed by a shotgun blast through a 9th-story window. So the examiner closed the case as a suicide. Now, I share you this case, which is Don Harper Mills, which you're all familiar with. He actually shared this case at that dinner in 1994. Now, the story, I hate to break it to you, actually did not happen. But the reason he shared the story was because for people who are learning forensic science, this is awesome. Because you basically have to re-examine all the different aspects of a theoretical case, but it lets them understand the law that much better. Now, there's, in order to understand really the full conceptual aspect of the law, you really need to take examples or cases that really takes the law to its edge. Normative things that happen every day, so it's not just a big deal. You don't really learn so much about the nature of the law. But when you extend it and give these far-flung cases, so then it becomes much more exciting and be able to understand the extension of the law as much as possible. That's what we do when we learn Gemara. We can take these very... And Gemara has many of very almost impossible cases, And because that's the way we're able to understand the depth, the breadth of God's law. And so when we learn Gemara, this is exactly what we're doing. We're like the forensic scientist that's interested to understand the outer limits of any particular law. Okay, number three. There's a very fascinating book that came out last year. It's called A Legacy. It's the teachings for life from the great Lithuanian rabbis. It was a book that was collaborated between Rabbi Beryl Wine, who lives here in Yerushalayim, formerly of Muncie, and Rabbi Warren Goldstein, who's the chief rabbi of South Africa, and he's the one who really started the Shabbos Project, that you're probably all familiar with. So Rabbi Goldstein was a Talmud. He actually learned in Tells in Cleveland. He got something with the Cleveland guys. So he was a Talmud of Rav Gifter. Rav Gifter wrote a sefer called Pirkei Torah, and in it he writes that the halacha must be an extension of Torah learning, and the mitzvos must flow from Chachos and Torah. In other words, the wisdom and the intellect of the Torah in the area of halacha demonstrates Torah learning as a force and energy behind action. Halacha is Chachmas HaTorah in action. There is no separation between Torah learning and halacha. And as if they were totally separate parts of Torah. And that's what people often make this misconception, that they see it, okay, there's learning, but I don't see the connection between my learning or Gemara learning and what actually the halacha is. And what halacha really is all the wisdom, the depth of the great wisdom of Torah actually being put into action, the Maisa. The Gemara Sota and Daf Chaf Bet and Aleph says that a person would make halachic rulings just based on the Mishnah alone, just a superficial understanding of the law, then he's as if he destroys the world. The Maharal explains this further. Gemara continues, one who acts without understanding is not really worshipping God. He's considered to be one who's involved in witchcraft, as a sorcerer. So yeah, we have to understand that whatever we do, halach l'maisa, however we live as a Jew, is an expression of very, very deep ideas, and we have to understand the whole part of it, what leads us to it, the actual action. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Shlita, Rebbe of mine, Rosh Yeshiva Gush, so he has writes about it, a recommended reading. He has one of the books that was published called Leaves of Faith, and he actually, the first article is called Why Learn Gemara. So he actually addresses this, some of the ideas is found there as well, that we're sharing. But he has another article where he talks about the concept of Osek, the mitzvah, patur, a mitzvah. That a person is doing a mitzvah, right? He doesn't have to do another mitzvah. He's exempt from doing the other mitzvah. He's involved in one, doesn't do the other. The exception is Talmud Torah, that if you're learning Torah, you have to stop what you're doing and do the mitzvah. The question is why? Why should that not apply for learning Torah as well? Learning Torah is the greatest mitzvah. Talmud Torah v'nei kulam. Why, if I'm learning Torah, should I stop that mitzvah, do another mitzvah? It should be no different than any other mitzvah. So Rav Aaron explains, based on the Rambam, that the Rambam really held that there is a concept of osing mitzvah patur min mitzvah when it comes to Talmud Torah. But what is when I do the mitzvah, I am actually putting Talmud Torah into action. In other words, it's not that I'm stopping Talmud Torah when I do the mitzvah. It's an extension of Talmud Torah. There's Talmud Torah when I learn, and it's in my brain, it's in my intellect, and it's in the world of theory. And then when I do that mitzvah, I'm putting the Talmud Torah into action. It's live Talmud Torah, as it were. Okay, reality Talmud Torah. And therefore, it's just an extension. It's as if I'm still learning when I'm doing that mitzvah. It's the same type of idea you saw in Rav Gifter. Okay, number four. The Gemara Gittin on Samach Amad Aleph says that the covenant between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Jewish people was actually established over the oral law, over Torah Shebaal Peh. Torah Shebaal Peh is actually something that the whole world shares. The whole world has access to Torah Shebaal Peh, but Torah Shebaal Peh is unique to the Jewish people. The Gemara says that also Ritzon Kha Shetakir Mishamah Vahayolam Taman HaGadosh Ritzon Kha Atamakir HaKadosh Baruch Hu Midavek Hidracha. If you want to get to know HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you learn the Agadita part of the Torah, and this way you'll be able to understand or grasp HaKadosh Baruch Hu on some level and follow his ways. So, Gemara, we encounter HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We understand Him on some level. In the Tanya, Shnei Rezam Li'adi states that Talmud is a manifestation of God's will, even higher than the level of Chachma. By studying Gemara, a person's mind becomes one with God's will. That's He, right? You don't want He.
No, it's on He.
It's on
He.
Okay, just hit the red button.
It's a fan,
though.
Red button.
All
right. No, not that red one. Sorry.
Okay, no problem. So by studying Gemara, a person's mind becomes one with God's will in a perfect unity, making the person's mind godly. Okay, number five. Different angle here. Just because I'm not going to play in the NBA doesn't mean I stop playing pickup basketball. In other words, guys say, why should I learn Gemara? I'm not going to be a rabbi. Right? Whatever. I just want to know the bottom line. Why am I going to be a rabbi? And you think you're going to make it to the NBA? And yet you play basketball? We don't stop engaging in something just because I'm not going to do it professionally. There is value to it in and of itself. A little caveat to that is I have an uncle of mine who's been doing Daf Yomi for many, many years. And the first time that he went to Daf Yomi see him was actually in Madison Square Garden. And I actually went with him and we sat on the floor of the garden. And he's had an interesting car. He said, you know, every night I go to Daf Yomi Shir. He used to go in the English of Woodmere. And whenever I go to Daf Yomi Shir, there's always these guys playing pickup ball in the gym in Yonkers Woodmere. And look at this, you know, I made it to the floor of the garden before these guys did. You know, making Daf Yomi Shir get to the floor of the garden before the guys playing pickup basketball reach the floor of the garden. Okay, number six, the schar for learning is in the amelus, not in the actual accomplishment and knowing Torah. We get schar for the effort that we put in. Okay, we've spoken about this in a different context. Mashal, a guy's a carpenter. He's commissioned to build bookshelves, and he does a beautiful job. Makes, you know, really fantastic bookshelves, thick wood, and he's carrying the bookshelves up to deliver to the family that ordered them. And while he's carrying it with his worker, they drop, the whole thing smashes, bookcases are broken, and he comes to the Baal HaBayit and says, "I'm sorry with the bookcases, but here's the bill." It's like, he's talking about the bill. Because you ordered the bookcases for $10,000. I put in a lot of work, a lot of effort. I'm sorry they broke, but here's pay me the money. He goes, "I don't pay you anything. I don't care how much work you put in. I need bookcases. Without bookcases, I'm not paying you anything." And that's the way we work in this world. But in Torah, we get paid for our efforts. I can learn a whole year and putting in effort, and I can come out and I'll take a test, the rabbi will give me a test, and I'll fail the test. I won't remember anything. The schar is in the amelut, in the effort. And so everyone can be a great person in amelus. It all depends on you. You have to just put in your best effort. So even if you come out not knowing anything, the schar is there. And there's no greater schar than the schar of Talmud Torah. Number seven. We create a halachic reality through Torah learning. Rav Schefter sort of mentioned this kalach hayad. Rav Moshe Feinstein was a great posek, wrote the Shas Shuvas Igros Moshe, and in his introduction, which I also recommend you read, in his introduction to Igros Moshe, he basically addresses how is it that little me can have the audacity to give to Paskin Shilas. Who am I, Paskin Shilas, Moshe said. And it's a good question. And the answer is that this is what's meant by Elu Elu Dibre Elokim Chayim, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives the ability to a person who's learned Torah with Mesiras Nefesh and has gone through Torah with Yiras Shamayim, with proper respect to the Torah, he has the ability to learn the sugya and to get in the Paskin Shalas. He says, "I don't have to. I can come up to it with a conclusion that may not agree with people who came before me, great people. And he did. He argued on Chassam Sofer and Rabbi Akiva Eiger and others. He says, but I ain't a dying el masha mesha in a bro. I can only give an answer what I see before me. I've gone through Surya, I've gone through Rishon, I've gone through Shulchan Aruch. This is the conclusion I've come to. Elu ve'elu direkun chayim. Kadosh Baruch Hu says that I'm right. Am I right objectively? No, I'm right subjectively. This is what I came up with. And I have the right to paskin, even though I'm not saying I'm any greater than anybody else that came before me. Even though I may argue with them, I'm not saying I'm greater than them. But I have to do what I see is true. And if someone who's learning Torah just comes to this conclusion, and he learned Torah, meaning he's seen all of Shas. Rav Moshe went through Shas over 200 times, went through Shulchan Aruch over 150 times. He's seen everything, so he can give a psak. So we actually create the reality through our Torah learning. The Gemara, it's actually related to Ksubas, related to Hanukkah coming up, that the Chachamim have a power actually to change reality. The classic example that Gemara gives is that the Chachamim, if they decide that the month should be an Ibur Chodesh, we should have a full month, right, where we have 30 days as opposed to 29 days, which would then a young girl who maybe now her three-year birthday is now pushed off a day, so her Bisuleh Achozer, we're learning about the Sugyas and Ksubas about removing the Bisulim. If a girl is raped or whatever happens, her Bisula was removed before she was three, so it grows back. Comes back. As long as she's 3 years old, it grows back. So that once she turns 3 years in a day, it won't grow back. But based on the Chachamim, they establish a new moon which pushes off her birthday one day. We say that that reality is that the Bisulim come back. Even though, had they not made a new moon, and maybe objectively they made a mistake even, the new moon had already appeared, but the Bezdin decided for whatever reason that it hadn't, her virginity actually returns. So we create a true halachic reality from our learning. Number 8. Unlike any other system of law, and I believe Rav Shechter touches, because he usually does in that shir, I didn't hear the entire shir, but I imagine he mentioned this idea. It's like other systems of law constantly are changing. Okay? It evolves, the law evolves with what's current or what's... you know, many, many examples of this you have in United States law, right? And many states now are talking about marijuana becoming legal, and many states across the United States are talking about, recognizing gay marriage. So the law is changing. If you would have asked somebody 30 years ago if this would ever happen, they thought, no way, it's impossible that they're going to allow gay marriage, allow marijuana to be legal. It's impossible. But the law changes. However, the Torah of the law doesn't change. Applications of the law does change. But the law itself is immutable. Because the entire Torah, the Ramban says, the entire Torah is the name of God, and just as God is immutable, therefore so is the law. The nature of the law is the same, but its scope may change. So we must know its nature to know how to apply to new realities. We have to know the entire Torah, we have to know in depth, in order to know when we can apply it, how to apply it to new realities. Number 9. At the same time, we are partners with God. This is also Rav Shechter touched upon, informing the oral law. The famous Gemara in Bava Metzia on Daf Nuntes has a story of Tanur Rosh Achnai. There was a dispute between Rav Eliezer and Chachamim regarding to this particular subject. Is it Tameh? Is it Tahar? And Rav Eliezer was a Das Yachad. He was the one opinion against the majority. And he said, you know, if the halacha is like me, the walls of the Beis Medrash are going to shake. And the walls of the Beis Medrash shake. And they said, no, but the halacha is like, not like you. We're the majority. And he said, if the halacha is like me, the water, the stream is going to go, it's only turn upstream. And a miracle happened, turn upstream. And he said, a baskel is going to come down and say that and show the halacha is like me. And a baskel was heard. The halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer, b'chol makom. Every place the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer. And Rabbi Yeshua said, Lo b'shamayimi, the Torah is not in heaven anymore. Once the Torah is given to man, it's man's Torah. And we follow the majority. So in other words, even though objectively God felt that Rabbi Elazar was right, it's tough luck on God. We now establish what the Torah is. And the Baskel then came down and said, Nitzchuni banai nitzchuni. You have defeated me. Which Reb Soloveitchik taught to mean that you've created me into Netzach. That now you've made me the Torah to be eternal. Because the Torah is now constantly, it's not stagnant. Rav Shaffer said, there's constantly chidushim being created in the Torah. Because once the Torah is given to man, and as we continue to develop and new things come into the world, so the Torah is not stagnant, it becomes eternal. It's constantly evolving, new chidushim the whole time. And when we learn here in the year 2014-15, it's the Torah is being learned anew and is eternal. Okay, we have 5 minutes for the next nine. No, seven. Okay, Beis Halevi Nasa V'Nishma. Beis Halevi says that the two parts of the Torah, there's the Nasa Nishma, the Torah that we understand, the Nasa, and then the Nishma, the Torah that's learned, even if it has no practical application. And it's in that Torah, in the Nishma part of Torah, where we really show our love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. L'mashlama davadome, when a husband and wife, when they're talking about practical matters, that doesn't really give the full expression of their love for each other. When the husband whispers sweet nothings to his wife, when they talk about things that aren't practical, not about our kids, school, carpool, all those things, those are very practical things, but the real expression of love is in the sweet nothings, is in the things that are not practical. That's where we give a full expression of our love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when we learn those things that don't have necessarily practical application. 11. To live a life of depth, not just superficially and shallow. You need to understand all the different layers. The deeper you go, the more you understand the interconnectedness of everything. Ultimately, it is all a reflection of oneness of God. We spoke about this in a different context. But Moshe Shapiro lives up here in Bayit Vegan, one of the deepest thinkers in Torah that's around today. So he would take three questions. Three random questions, nothing have to do with one another. And this is something he does on a regular basis. And then he gives one answer to the three questions. Because his knowledge of Torah is so deep that everything is a reflection of God's oneness. Everything in Torah is actually interconnected. And when you get to the root of the thing, you're able to say, okay, explain that idea, that root, you're able to answer many, many different questions. On one answer can answer many different questions. So the deeper we go, the more we connect to God's oneness. Okay, number 12. This is a very, very important idea that really deserves a lot more time. But many people come to yeshiva, and there's some of us will develop into people who have learned lamdanim, other people won't. The Gemara Chazal tells us that 1,000 students enter the yeshiva and only one becomes a great rabbi. The yeshivas are in the business of producing gedolim, producing great people. But only one becomes a rabbi of 1,000. So it's a waste of time for the other 999, which we're probably part of it. Just no insult to you, just statistically, we're probably part of the 999. So is it a waste? Are we wasting our time just so that one of us can become a rabbi? No. So Rav Meir Shapiro, the founder of Daf Yomi, Rav Shiva Yeshivas Chachmei Lublin, Zatzal, he explains that you need the other 999 to know and appreciate what a rabbi is. So even if you don't become a great scholar, but you appreciate scholarship, you appreciate what a rav is. And it's a very interesting thing that you find that people, the more learned a people is, the more they value the rabbi. Not the less. You would think the other way. I already know to learn. What do I need a rabbi for? No, just that. Just the opposite happens. In Israel, it used to be a phenomenon 30, 40 years ago in Israel, most shuls didn't have a rabbi. But people became more learned. And as people learned more and went to yeshivas and hezer yeshivas and all this, the whole blossoming of Torah, it's very hard to find a shul that doesn't have a rabbi today. Because we value Torah much more than the previous generation did in Israel. And so the more you value Torah, the more you appreciate what learning is, the more you appreciate the value of a rabbi. And that's what you find. The more, you know, learn in the community, the more they value the rabbi, the more they give cover to the rabbi. The less learn in the community, the less they give. Those are the rabbis that they're constantly renewing their contracts in those communities. Okay, number 13. Also means a lot of time. But Torah teaches you to learn how to think. Shikla Das, weighing things with your intellect, is the most is acquired from learning Gemara. And according to the Bali Mishnah, it's one of the most important mitzvot a person can acquire. Rav Yerucham, the famous Baal Musar, Mashkiach, Rav Yerucham of Ovetz of the Mir, he said that Shikul HaDat allows one to actually conquer his own desires. Chavetz Chaim asked, what did the manna taste like if you didn't think about any particular food? The answer is nothing. If you don't think, life has no time. The importance of one's ability to be intellectually focused in deep analysis of a sugya cannot be overstated. The Chalbos Halavavos and Shara Avodos Elokim. A person should develop his intellect and his thought process that will allow him to remove foolishness that often overcomes a person and will be able to understand all the axes of his life based on truth. But will not be susceptible to the guile tricks of the Yetzirah. It all depends on how much he engages his brain when he studies Torah. The more he uses it, the more he will strengthen and purify himself and his thinking process. Just very quickly, I've got a lot more to say on this, but when I used to work at Yeshiva University many years ago, and they were undergoing Middle States accreditation, which is something, a process they go every 10 or so years, and they came to Israel to check out the learning program that goes on in all these yeshivas. There weren't so many yeshivas back then. So, but they wanted to see whether Yeshiva University gives credits for a year in Israel. What are the guys doing here? So, they were very nervous about what was going on at the time. About making sure they're getting accreditation. They weren't sure what's going to happen when they come to Yeshiva. There's no tests in Yeshiva, etc., etc. So it was a professor from Indiana University. Took him to Yeshiva Karen Vyavna, and they took him right in the middle of morning Seder. And he walks into the Yeshiva Karen Vyavna in the middle of morning Seder, and the guy was blown away. Mamish, his jaw dropped. And seeing like full base medicine, guys arguing, you know, yelling at each other, standing over a Gemara, and he's like, this is the greatest expression of higher learning that I've ever seen. There's no test. No test. And look how they engage. Everyone with their own text. Study partners, one-on-one. This is the way people study in Oxford and Cambridge. They have one-on-one tutorials. It's the most challenging. Everyone's engaged. It's not just sitting in a lecture, with 100 people sitting in a lecture and everyone doing their own thing. Everyone on their own Facebook page, not listening to what the lecturer has to say. And then one guy writes notes and you just, cram for the test. Because that's not real learning. This is real learning. This is real engagement. He never saw such a high. He was mamish blown away. Wasn't a Jewish guy, but he was a professor of Middle Eastern study, and appreciated the learning of Torah Lishma that he saw witnessed that day. Okay, again, last three things, which each one is number 14, is one's preoccupation with Torah is what allows the Torah to be an antidote to the Yetzirah. The Gemara says in Kedushin, Barasi Yetzirah, Barasi Torah Tavlin, that the Torah is an antidote. But how does that work? It's only when your mind is on Torah, when you're thinking about the sugya, even after you close the Gemara. As is described in the Rambam and the Hilchos Mikvaos, look it up over there, in real time. But when you're thinking about a sugya, when your mind is occupied with Torah, so then it's able to ward off the Yetzirahs that pop thoughts into your mind and ideas and things. That's when it works, when you're actually involved in deep learning of Torah. Number 15, being part of a Masorah community. Something Rav Soloveitch developed, the mission in Adiyot says that Ha'av zocha leben benoi b'koch v'oshu b'chachim v'shanim v'misra ador sefana v'akeis. Rav Akiva said that a father endows his son with good looks, strength, riches, wisdom, longevity, and the number of generations before him, and this is the secret of the redemption. As it says, he proclaimed the generation from the beginning. The Rav in a speech he gave at the Karasik family's Pidyon HaBen, which Rabbi David was at, I'll tell you about it another time, he sort of describes the cacophony of voices that appear in the shir, how the students are a part of the dialogue. You connect yourself to the Mesorah community. The Rav described that he came into shir, and then in would walk the grandfather of the rabbi himself, Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik, would walk in. And then someone mentions the Ritva, and then someone mentions the Shach, and there's a whole argument that's going on between the Reb Chaim and the Ritva and the Shach. And he brings it to life. You're part of this conversation. You're part of this Mesorah community that dates back thousands of years. You are part of that conversation when you're learning Gemara. Finally, at the end of the day, number 16, if a person wants to love learning, paradoxically, he has to learn out of necessity. According to Revolvi and Ali Shor, the Torah is a source of life, and you must have the attitude that it's not a luxury to learn, but a necessity. Just like I need to eat and drink and sleep to sustain my physical body, I need to learn to nourish my spirit, my neshama. And so, I think that's why the Gemara is associative, which mirrors the conversations of our lives. In other words, right, the Gemara, when it all of a sudden goes on tangents, it mentions something, goes off the other thing, and not only like a few lines later, or sometimes a page later, it comes back to the thing that we were talking about. And that's what we, when we have conversations, that's how we operate. We work by association. Someone mentions something, you start talking about one thing, the other guy mentions, I had that guy on my fantasy football team. Oh, that guy, yeah, he was from, I went to college there, talk about that college. All of a sudden, where how do we get onto the subject of B'chal? But you see, the Gemara mirrors our own lives. We rarely come to conclusions in our own lives and concede points when we argue. You come to one of our Rebbeim meetings, you'll know what I mean. More than the Mishnah, more than the Kos, Gemara is a mirror to real living. Halacha is mixed with Agadah, actions are intertwined with feelings, accomplishments with failures. It is all there in the Talmud. We learn as we live, and we live as we learn. Have a good day, friends. We're going to start the next year in 5 minutes, okay?
Do you put all these sources together?